Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
For our first topic today, this was probably recycled on a slow news day. There was a New York Post article about resurfaced docs that were declassified 25 years ago from the CIA that claimed to have confirmed the existence and location of the Ark of the Covenant by use of remote viewing, or ESP. We're going to set aside, because we're going to talk about this in the next topic, the practice of using ESP.
Sure. Okay?
But my question is going to be, do we really want to find the Ark of the Covenant?
I think it'd be pretty cool.
Okay. I think it's cool to find some religious artifacts.
I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was a little kid. I used to go dig in the backyard and look for bones and things like that.
Yep.
So I'm always fascinated by the discoveries of archaeology. And certainly there's a lot of, you know, fake news out there. You see these articles on the internet about, you know, they found some village in the jungle and all these things. And it's interesting. And I think we need to explore and see and be open to what science can show to us and what archaeology can
show. Let me tell you why I'm asking the question, though,
sure.
Because there was something also in the last month, probably again on a slow, because it seems to be once a year they tell us that they have found what seems to be Noah's Ark somewhere in Turkey. And it was some kind of inorganic looking fossilized remains on the top of a mountain that they're saying this is probably Noah's Ark. Okay, well, that'd be cool to find Noah's Ark. Okay, there's the Indiana Jones movies, you know, about the Ark of the Covenant, which is probably how most people have even never heard of the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
But then there's the one about the Holy Grail. When I watched that movie, they got it wrong about drinking from the cup
and the power of
the power of it, as though the cup itself.
Yeah. As if it were a destructive power that
annihilates holds some power, right? When as Catholics, we know the teachings would be that it's the contents of the cup, right?
Sure.
But the Ark of the Covenant is a little different deal, right? So, what's in the Ark?
What's in the Ark? Oh, gosh. You're putting me on the spot here, Chris.
I have it down.
Just for the record, Chris never tells me the topics beforehand. He just springs it on me. So he's testing my theological knowledge here.
Correct. Well, and your archaeological knowledge.
Okay. What's in the Ark of the Covenant? At least according to the book of Exodus, and I think later in the later books after that, there's some, obviously, the two tablets of the law.
Right.
The manna.
Yep, a golden jar of manna.
Yes, and there's one other
thing. That's right, one other thing.
I'm trying to remember what the other third thing is. Got to help me out here, Chris.
Aaron's staff.
Yes.
Okay.
Why do you think those three things are in there?
Well, these are obviously very important. I mean, they're artifacts, but at the time, I mean, these are...
They're significant.
They're absolutely
the most significant things for the Jewish people and the covenant.
Right. Yeah. Okay, but touching or mishandling the Ark, as we saw in Indiana Jones, could result in death.
Well, we see it in the Old Testament. It's not that's based on actually a biblical fact. The two sons sons of Phinehas, I think, that touched the ark and they died instantly.
Yes. So in 2 Samuel 6, a man named Uzzah touched the ark and was struck dead by God. Okay.
And he was just trying to stabilize it because it was falling over.
Okay.
So it wasn't like he was touching it in a sacrilegious way or anything, but certainly a power there.
In Joshua 6, the ark plays a central role in the fall of the walls of Jericho.
Right, yep.
In 1 Samuel 5, the Philistines capture the ark, and then they're afflicted by a series of plagues until they return it.
Right.
So, there's this whole notion that the ark...
Well, but there's also the flip side, don't forget. Because David, after this guy dies when he's on the way bringing it back to Jerusalem, he says, I don't want this in my home, and he gives it to one of his his lieutenants, and then his family's blessed by the presence of the ark. So it's an interesting contrast. Maybe for those who are far from God and not seeking God, it becomes the means of their destruction.
Right.
But those who are truly seeking the Lord, it's a source of blessing.
But then the Israelites carry it into war. And are successful when
until Saul loses it in battle.
Until he loses it to the Philistines.
Yeah, loses it to the Philistines.
Right. So amongst all the other religious relics, I don't know of anyone that would be considered potentially dangerous.
Not to my knowledge. Certainly we can go back to Rome and see the Holy Cross in Jerusalem Church, and it has the relics of the Passion.
Right.
No one's being struck dead because they're, coming and touching the pillar upon which Jesus was scourged, or the thorns, or the nails, or the sign that was above his head.
Right. Well, what piqued my interest in this was that, I think it's cool when we find religious artifacts, or that they make further discoveries like the Shroud of Turin, the recent carbon dating to actual 2,000 years ago, further possibly validating it as the true Shroud of Christ.
There's a whole other element to this we might be missing, Chris. I mean, we said that this was an article that came out of the New York Times, right?
New York Post.
So there's clearly an interest that they're trying to tap into. And you see this every year, you know, that the Times will put out an article about, did Jesus really die? Mm-hmm. Did he really rise from the dead? Because we have a Christian subculture, or, you know, post-Christian culture in our society, where these things are of interest to people. And God is reaching out to us in different ways. People are trying to capitalize on the what they can make financially off of this interest. But there's something that touches the human heart. And I think that's what we have to look to. What is it about the Ark of the Covenant that catches people's attention, that draws them in? And it's kind of this folkloric remembrance, like, oh, when I was a kid, I remember reading something in the Bible, or my mom told me this story. But then we've got to take it to a deeper level. Like, what is it that God wants to tell us through the Ark of the Covenant? And what is it we could learn from an archaeological discovery of this nature?
Yeah, you touched on it. Like I said, it was probably a slow news day. They recycled the story. Yeah, right. It happens, you know, once a year they come up with stuff like this. Anyways.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed, or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
All right, so in our last topic, I made a reference to ESP.
And remind us what that ESP is.
Extrasensory perception.
Oh, yes. Right. So exciting.
Right. So the reference was about the CIA using people who were using ESP, right, to find the Ark of the Covenant. Well, it, you know, raised the question in my mind of whether that's dabbling in the occult. And then another article that I recently read about the growing trend of business execs consulting astrologers for major decisions, particularly in South Asia. So this practice is more prevalent in Asia. There's also an emerging trend in Western business to do the same. Some U.S. companies are incorporating astrology and handwriting analysis into their hiring processes. In the country of India, they have these advisors advising on decisions ranging from company launch dates to their office locations. Then, of course, we all remember after the 1981 assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan that Nancy Reagan began using Joan Quigley, right, for help in scheduling the president's public appearances and key meetings and whatnot. So, I mean, I was driving over here and looking at the car in front of me, was had one of those little nets hanging down from the, you know,
a dream catcher,
right? Yes. And you have terms like people saying knock on wood. And I myself have used the term feng shui. You know, I'm in real estate and I'm looking at a property. I might say, oh, that has bad feng shui. I don't really mean I'm harnessing wind and water like that term actually means, but I'm saying, you know, it just doesn't flow, right? So where are you crossing the line in your use of these? You know, is it wrong to even use the term knock on wood? I mean, astrology is easy, right? You shouldn't be consulting the stars for your horoscope.
Well, you bring up a question that I think it affects almost everyone in our society today. You know, even if you're not, you know, delving into those things, you've got friends who are, you know, messing around with Ouija board or or checking things
out. Ouija board's easy. Don't do it.
Well, it's easy for you to say that, but there's a lot of people who very nonchalantly get involved with stuff. Like they think it's just a joke. It's not real. But there's a deeper spiritual reality behind all of this, Chris. You know, growing up, my parish priest was an exorcist. And I had early experience, like firsthand experience, that this is not some fictitious idea. There's a spiritual reality. We are in a spiritual battle. As St. Paul says, our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and powers of the evil one, the darkness. And I've just recently finished reading a book by Father Carlos Martins, who's an exorcist and wrote a book called The Exorcist Files. And a lot of his stories, very nonchalant, talks about how people very innocently get involved with some of these powers or these, you know, trying to figure things out through astrology or seances, and they open themselves up to nefarious powers. It is a reality, and it's not something you want to mess around with. St. Thomas Aquinas talks about how for every action, there's a power behind it. Okay, so if someone is divining, you know, even if it's with sticks and they're finding water underground, well, it's not the stick that's fine. If there's some power behind that, and that power is not God, what is it? I wouldn't want to mess with that, because any power that's not God is not seeking our good. And I think we have to be cognizant of that and avoid, you know, playing with fire.
Okay. Are you even dabbling with it, though, by using terms innocently like knock on wood?
I wasn't even familiar with the background for knock on wood, so I don't think that that's going to be a problem. Just kind of use colloquially phrases that are part of our common culture. Right. But when you start doing things of actually seeking to leverage that power or use it in your favor or try to find out the future through powers which are not coming from God, then you get into problematic.
I'll give you an
area.
Example of one that I experienced. A good friend of mine from high school years ago got married. He fell away from the Catholic Church right after we went to college. At his wedding, which was officiated by his brother, was not in any kind of a church, passed around this blue orb and asked everybody to infuse it with their energy. And I turned to my wife and I said, we ain't doing that.
So. Well, I had an experience similar not too long ago. I was up in Vancouver for a conference. At the beginning of the conference, they wanted to invoke they had the local shaman come in from the local Indian tribe. And they were doing some kind of a funky ceremony. And I just like, I can appreciate indigenous cultures, but I don't need to be here for the invocation of whatever spirits they're invoking. And I walked out of the room, as did many other people, because I just don't feel comfortable with that. There is something, the power of Christ, that has overcome the powers of darkness. Let's stick with the power of Christ.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires. The next topic is what I'm going to call drugs are always the answer. So in the early 90s, a guy named James Swanson was working as a research psychologist at the University of California, Irvine. And he predicted back then, he was doing research on the new diagnosis back then of ADHD. Predicted that 3% was the rate that that scientists would be an accurate measure of the number of people who have ADHD. In 2024, according to the CDC, 15.5% of American adolescents, 21% of 14-year-old boys and 23% of 17-year-old boys have ADHD, according to the CDC. 7 million children have received an ADHD diagnosis. 7 million received that diagnosis in 2024. That's up from 6 million in 2016 and 2 million in the mid-90s. A guy named Russell Barkley was a prominent ADHD researcher, and he has labeled the disorder a diabetes of the brain. And he says that it is a chronic disorder that has to be managed every day to prevent the secondary harms. As many people know, the leading treatments for ADHD are Adderall and Ritalin, which are a type of amphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this, you and I, offline before about, I personally view this as child abuse, but I read a follow-up recently about another side effect. So there's even a medium dose of Adderall or Ritalin can triple a patient's likelihood of developing a psychosis or a mania. But there's another one that was a physiological side effect that I never heard about before. So children who take Ritalin for an extended period grow less quickly than non-medicated children. By the end of 36 months, between the start and the end of 36 months, subjects who had taken ADHD meds were on average an inch shorter than the ones who had never received the medication.
Mm-hmm.
They assumed that the shorter children would catch up during adolescence, but then when they did the follow-up 9 years after the initial experiment, the height gap remained. The symptoms for these kids off the meds and on the meds were also no different. The treating of it, long-term didn't change. So my question to you is, why do we always, it seems like everything in society, we always think that drugs are the answer? And the second question would be, let's say we called Ritalin and Adderall what they really are. Let's say, remember, I don't know if you remember Major League Baseball in the 70s, they took greenies in the dugout.
No, I don't remember that.
Okay, well, they all took greenies. Like Pete Rose was a big greenie taker. Well, it was, a way for them to
amp up their performance.
Well, and handle the rigors of being on the road.
Sure, ongoing stress.
They banned those in the early 2000s, but, they called it what it was, which is speed. So let's say we called Ritalin and Adderall speed. I think parents would be so, easily tricked. It's just what I think they're being tricked into taking or having their kids take these meds.
Yeah, labeling is an important part of getting anything done and moving people's opinion and shaping the way that we deal with things. So I think it's very important with any new phenomenon like this to say, what are the fruits of it? Because obviously science is continually evaluating things, looking at the evidence and looking at long-term effects, short-term effects of things. Certainly there are cases I've seen kids who are hyperactive.
Absolutely.
But oftentimes
you're looking at one of them.
Yeah. Well, me too. I mean, I worked with kids in youth work for over 20 years. And yeah, of course, there's kids with different personalities, kids who maybe are a little quicker intellect and they get bored with things in a classroom. And the reality is that oftentimes it's just a teacher who doesn't know how to handle vivacious kids in a classroom. Yep. That leads to them sending them to the doctor's office and getting a diagnosis so that they can get a prescription and tone them down. But it's really the ineffectiveness of the teacher that initiates that process in many cases. So I think we need to look at that as a society and see, is there really an underlying reality, or is it just a transitional period in which kids are, they're just active, they're hyper, it's part of the growing process.
Well, and it's
process.
Particularly boys.
Primarily boys, yes. And boys are just tactile learners.
Yeah.
And when they have to sit in straight classrooms and not move and not make any noise, it's antithetical to the way that they learn because they're tactile. They need to touch things. They need to experience things. They need to break things. They need to take them apart, put them back together. So I think for boys, they just need a different learning style. There's a number of doctors who have written also about the gender differences between boys and girls and how the educational process needs to adjust to the reality of differences in boys and girls. That's why historically you had all boys schools and you had all girls schools, so that teachers could teach according to the learning style of boys and girls.
Well, and the other difference from when I grew up, I'm assuming it was the same for you. I went to Catholic school. We were taught by nuns.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, we had a much longer recess.
Sure.
But number two, when we acted up, and by the way, I acted up a lot, we got paddled. Corporal punishment. Mm, I'm not necessarily advocating, but I do know that was always out there.
Sure.
And it maybe tempered maybe some of the things I would have otherwise done.
Yeah, boys need a firm hand. You know, applying a discipline that is immediate and direct is very necessary for boys. If you delay it for longer, it can create other problems, and they don't understand why they're being punished for something. So if you do it in the moment, they get it more quickly. Now, whether that's corporal punishment, probably not the best, especially right. If it's not a parent of the child. But there are other ways that you can do
like
that.
Longer recess or mandatory
energy and doing things. Going back to the issue of why do we give drugs to solve these problems? There are other ways to address the energy that kids have. And a lot of that starts with us as adults, understanding these are kids. Understanding that they need parameters, they need to get out their energy, they need healthy outlets, and making sure that we're not over-controlling their environment. This is a whole nother topic, organized sports today. You've probably heard of the book by Jonathan Haidt, who has been on the New York Times bestseller list for a long time now, The Anxious Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the absence of free play. We've overstructured the life of kids so they can't just go out and play in the playground or go out with their friends and play in the backyard.
When's the last time you saw a pickup football game happening in somebody's yard?
Never.
During COVID, maybe.
No. I mean, it just hasn't been happening. And kids need these healthy outlets. When they don't have them and they're just playing video games or on social media, we are seeing very negative effects in our society. And we need to take a harder look, not drug them up and give them more amphetamines, but rather look at the behaviors and the practices and the structures that we have in place.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires. So the next thing I'd like to talk with you about is what I'm going to call nothing new under the sun, right? So the idea here is, or the question here is, whether the transgender movement is really just a new form of Gnosticism. And so when I say nothing new under the sun, I mean, it seems like rarely, if ever, are we actually doing anything new this time? This time is different. Never seems to be the case. And so Gnosticism is the, if I could summarize, separation between the spiritual self and the material body, right? As though they are.
That's part of it.
Part of it
is also that we have a specialized knowledge that will save us.
Right, right. This
that's detached
this
from
this inner whatever it is you're trying to achieve, right? So if you look at the transgender movement and the distinction between one's inner self, i.e. your birth gender, and then, you know, your assumed
what you identify as
is this transgender movement really just a new form of Gnosticism?
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. There's a very fascinating book by Monsignor Shea called The Religion of the Day. And he talks precisely about this trend in our society today, in which we have we want to reject reality. And that's part of the demonic rejection of God's creation, that continually down through history, we find these various manifestations. It pops its head up in different forms, but there's always some way of rejecting reality as it is given to us by God and wanting to create it, our own alternative reality. And certainly that's what's going on with transgenderism. Whether people are fully cognizant of or not is another question. You know, I think there's some well-intentioned people that they just want to help people and make them feel welcomed and not exclude people. There's some kind of compassionate, bleeding heart type
of
approaches.
There's always a kernel of that.
Yeah, which and you want to respect the good intentions of people, but we need to balance the compassion with truth. Because devoid of truth, we end up actually hurting people very deeply. And that's what's coming up more and more now. I was at an event just the other night, and a gentleman from England was talking about the reversal of the health policy in England. For a number of years, they were under this guise of gender-affirming care mm-hmm. and giving hormone blockers to kids who wanted to change their sex. And now they've had a number of court cases that have come back of young people who were misled during their confused teenage years, and they're coming back and saying, why did no one tell me of the consequences of this? This has not helped my psychological stability. This has ruined my life. And saying this is unconscionable, that as a society of adults who should know better, we are misleading young people or allowing them in their confusion, their gender dysphoria, to ruin their lives. It is abuse of children. It's a mutilation of the body mm-hmm. in ways that are, in most cases, irreparable.
Yeah,
now, so, it makes a lot of money, though.
Right, but I think you hit the nail on the head about, I don't know if you've seen those signs on people's lawns that say, be kind.
I don't know that I've noticed that one. I've seen lots of other crazy
lots of other signs, but it's kind of not as popular as it was a couple years ago, but that sign was proliferating on many people's lawns and every time I saw it, I'm like, no, how about be truthful? Right. So is it better to be kind or to be truthful? And my answer is you can be very kind and you can go to hell, but you can't be untruthful and go to heaven. Right.
Well,
you
gotta be I would truthful. Say it a little bit differently. There's a classic Latin phrase. It's just suaviter in forma, fortiter in re, which means be firm in the truth, but be gentle in the way you present it. Yep. And I think that harmonizing the truth with a gentle and compassionate way of bringing it about is really important, because you can alienate people. And I've seen this over and over. People who say, I left the Catholic Church because Father yelled at me in confession. Or the priest was really legalistic when we were doing our marriage prep and didn't understand our situation. Okay, so we need to be gentle with people so we don't turn them away, but we need to be firm.
Right, but so another way of saying that is that, you know, kindness is not the ultimate goal. I mean,
correct.
Truth.
Exactly. We have to live in the truth, and the truth sets us free. Compassion doesn't set us free.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires. Do you know who Wayne Gretzky is?
Isn't he a basketball player?
Ah, come on.
I'm just kidding. No, yeah, he's the hockey great.
Right. He was in the news lately because of Donald Trump and his spouting off about different sovereignties taking over Greenland or making, you know, Canada the 51st state. So those Canadian sovereignty remarks, there's some movement in Canada, petitions that have been organized to remove Wayne Gretzky's name from various highways or monuments because he didn't speak out against these attacks on Canadian sovereignty. And we've seen this in so many circumstances, from Revolutionary War figures to slavery, you know, whatever. So under what circumstances would you support renaming a place? So I'm going to give you a couple of examples and we'll go through them, right? So let's say somebody was a Nazi sympathizer who has been, you know, memorialized in something on a roadway or whatever. And that one's fairly easy, right? If they were a known Nazi sympathizer and the monument was put into place before we knew that. Let's say there was a road that was named after Adolf Hitler, right?
I would take this in a whole different direction.
Well, let me go through the litany first, and then tell me the overarching.
All right.
Okay, that one to me is easy. Nazi sympathizer. It's just hard to. Well, again, you can't have Adolf Hitler way.
Yeah, but you're looking at history from the vantage point of modern day sensibility and awareness. A person who we might today label as a Nazi sympathizer may have been a person who was just, you know, reading the newspaper in Germany and saw that the Nazi party was getting him out of economic debt.
Sure.
Had no idea about the death camps and about some of the policies.
All right, but I'm talking, let's say Adolf Hitler. If there's Adolf Hitler Boulevard.
Gotcha.
Okay?
I'll concede that one.
That's an easy one. Okay, then we've got the ones of late, like they're removing Christopher Columbus statues from various places in New York City and whatnot because of imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that one seems ridiculous to me.
Well, again, it depends on your vantage point. So you're looking at it as like, no, Christopher Columbus was a great discoverer. But if a person is imbued with Marxist theology or Marxist way of looking at the world and see that imperialism and hegemony is the worst evil and we have to equalize things, they would see it like, yeah, we need to get rid of the memory of this guy. So it depends on your values and your worldview.
Okay, but then we can't name anything about after anybody because somebody's going to always
exactly.
have a problem.
Exactly.
So it my really question goes... to you is though, at what point, and I'm going to give you a couple of other examples here. There's imperialism, there's supporters of slavery, which has mm-hmm. been the recent move.
Thomas Jefferson had slaves and George Washington did, so one let's take them off.
One that's never mentioned, hasn't been mentioned yet, and it's very curious to me that it hasn't been mentioned, is people who were against women's suffrage.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of the historic American political figures who were against women's suffrage, yet no one ever mentions that, mm-hmm. right? Slavery is always mentioned, but not women's right to vote. How about the Buddha statues that were destroyed by the Taliban,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, those big carvings in the cliff that they destroyed when they retook power as, you know, being, you know, idolatrous.
I think we have to go to a little bit deeper level here, Chris, because anyone who wants to imbue a culture and a worldview, they have to use symbols. And so symbols, whether they're statues or naming of streets, they reinforce a certain identity. So when people are tearing down statues, renaming things, what is it that they're really trying to do? They're trying to reshape the identity of a country, its worldview. This is what happens naturally when you begin to put in a Christian worldview. What happens? You have saints, saint names, you have statues, mm-hmm. you have churches, and it creates a whole culture that reinforces an identity as we are followers of Jesus Christ. And so when you have this iconoclastic approach to destroying the symbols of a culture, it's to shift the identity. So there needs to be a deeper discussion about who are we? What do we hold to be good and true? And what are the things that we want to aspire to as a country? I think what's happened in the United States is that there has been, over the last 60, 70 years, an introduction of socialist ideas into university system, which has gradually eroded our sense of Christian identity as and Western identity. They're intentionally trying to undermine some of these aspects of our society and get rid of the symbols and the names which tie us to a heritage. When you dislodge people's rootedness and their identity, it's much easier to manipulate them.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting because there is a spectrum here. You know, as we become more technologically advanced, I am certain in the next, I don't know how many years, if it's 5, 10, 20, that we're going to finally figure out, everyone's going to agree about what the evil of abortion really is. What I'm getting at is, you know, we've got all these politicians who are, you know, abortion advocates.
Right.
Someday, you know, we're probably going to be asking the question whether or not such and such boulevard should be named after so-and-so when we realize what abortion really is.
Yes, definitely.
Right. And so there are instances like we can't have Adolf Hitler Boulevard where this is appropriate. In most cases, I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
I think in a lot of cases it is, but I think we need to see what is the deeper intent. They're trying to change identity as a culture, as a nation. And I think we need to hold on to those things which are good and true and beautiful.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.